Well, thank you very much for being here as we continue our day. I'm Andrew Obin, BofA's multi-industrials analyst, and we continue our day with 3M. And we are happy to have here David Meline, our company's Senior Vice President and CFO, as well as Matt Ginter, Vice President, Investor Relations. And I guess I do have to say, I guess 3M is our top pick. We have it on our U.S. one list, and happy to have them, and we think it's a transformation story that is being ignored by the street, and I will let David talk about it.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Okay, good morning, all. So I'm gonna try to cover this in about 10 minutes, so we have plenty of time for Q&A here. And what I've got is a series of charts that's really just to introduce to you the company and the transformation that we're in the process of going through. So you look at the company, it's a 110-year-old company, and really, the business model is based on a few fundamental strengths of the company, that being in technology and innovation. We have a very deep capability in manufacturing and a very vertically integrated business model, which works very effectively for the business. We're a very global company with basically two-thirds of our sales are in non-U.S. locations. And we've also had a tradition of a strong financial backbone for the company that served the business very well over a very long time. If you look at our performance over the last decade, what we would observe is we've delivered through that period 10% annual earnings growth for the company, based on 6% top-line growth on average during the period, and an average return on capital of 22%. If you look at 2013, in terms of the results from the business, we grew organically at 3.4% that last year, with roughly $31 billion of revenue. We had operating margins last year, which were consistent with the prior year at 21.6%, with four of our five business sectors delivering operating margins in excess of 21%. Earnings per share of $6.72, which was up 6% on the prior year. We returned a record $6.9 billion of cash to shareholders last year via dividends and share repurchase, free cash flow conversion of 89%, return on capital of 20%. And we also announced last year, which I'll talk about a little bit more, is an enhanced capital allocation strategy as we shift the balance sheet position to be more efficient going forward. And that included an increase in our dividend here in the first quarter by 35% over last year. If you look at the business by sector, we have five business sectors you can see here. The largest sector, which is about a third of the company, is in the industrial business, along with a healthcare business, a consumer business, a safety and graphics business, and electronics and energy. In terms of the global coverage, as I already said, roughly 65% of our sales are international, 35% in the U.S., and it's a pretty broad footprint in terms of coverage around the globe. We also have 35% of our sales are in developing markets, so a good balance between our mature and developing market positions as well. In terms of key priorities for 3M as we transform the company, the first one that we're focused on is really actively managing the portfolio of businesses that we have. So, these dots represent the roughly 35 operating divisions that have revenue-generating capability within the five sectors. And what we've done here is we've started a process over the last couple of years, from the corporate level, where we define and categorize our businesses, based on the strategic attractiveness of the businesses in the portfolio, as well as the financial performance of the businesses. And you can see here, we've classified five of our divisions as heartland businesses, which are basically fully developed franchises, very strong financial performance and growth that we want to continue to nurture and grow those businesses. We have a group called Push Forward, which tend to be not fully developed yet, so they may not have global coverage in all markets yet. They typically have higher growth profiles, and so they're in a category where we feel the opportunity to really accelerate growth and investment is very strong for the company. And then finally, we have a group we classified as strategic review, which when we did this in late 2012 represented about 8% of the company's revenue, and we've been going through a process of determining the right outcome for those businesses, which is either to fix them, combine, harvest, or sell those businesses. And we've completed about $2.5 billion out of $1.5 billion out of $2.5 billion in that category. Second focus area, which is always a focus area for 3M, is as it's at the core of our business model, is around R&D investment. We've been investing somewhere 5.5% of revenue over recent years in R&D, and we determined the opportunity to improve our effectiveness in this area, and we've committed to increase the R&D spend by the end of the five-year period to around 6% of revenue. One of the key measures we use in this area to determine the effectiveness of our R&D is what percent of our sales are from products launched within the last 5 years. And as you can see here, last year, 33% of the company's sales were from products launched within that five-year period, and we think that will be increasing to around 37% by 2017. While we're primarily an organic growth innovation company, we also have found through many years that acquisitions are a good complement to our organic growth machine, and we reaffirmed last year that we expect over the five-year period through 2017 to deploy roughly $5 to $10 billion towards additional acquisitions. Another key initiative of the company, as we grow and become more global, we think it's very important for us to standardize business processes to fully leverage the business, which is increasingly complex and large. So we're right now in year four of a seven-year rollout of an SAP-based ERP system. So we've largely completed the development phase of that project, and we're now in progressive deployment across the globe. We'll be investing $700 to $800 million in the project through the period, and we expect to generate one-time working capital benefits of $500 million by the time we've completed, and annual operating efficiencies of an additional $500 million annually. As I mentioned, we announced late last year an adjustment to have a more efficient capital structure, and as part of that, we're shifting from largely equity finance to an appropriate balance of equity and debt. As a consequence of that shift, what we concluded was that we would be increasing the total share repurchase during the period through 2017 to accomplish that shift, and so we'll be repurchasing between $17 and $22 billion of shares through 2017, and this year we've indicated we would do $3 to $5 billion during 2014. Another part of the update we did on the capital structure of the company and capital allocation was we concluded that it would be appropriate to move our dividend payout ratio back up into the mid-40% range, and that required us to increase the dividend this year. So in the first quarter, we increased the dividend by 35% over last year. So I've already covered these key focus areas for the corporation this year. And then this is, just to sum it up, the key four financial goals that we have for the company for the period of 2013 to 17, which are very aligned with our proven performance over recent years. So continuing with double-digit earnings growth in the 9% to 11% range, organic growth, which would be 1.5 times industrial production, or 4% to 6% in this 5-year period, continuing a long track record of strong return on invested capital for the business, averaging here around 20%, and then finally continuing also on a track record of strong free cash flow conversion, which we expect in the period to continue to be around 100% free cash flow conversion. So with that, I will join Andrew here for Q&A. Thank you very much.
Let me ask the first question. You know, if I look at the stock performance, you know, year to date, I think you guys have been hit together with some EM-exposed names, and I think there are two sets of concerns that investors have. First, just the FX exposure,
right,
because I think people still remember what happened back in 98. And I think the second issue is, you know, this, I think this theme of EM CapEx slowdown. I think we've been hearing, some positive things about CapEx acceleration in places like China. But, you know, still, I think, you know, you hear about Brazil, you hear about Russian economy, you hear mixed message in India. So could you just address two sets of concerns? A, just the FX concern, and B, sort of spending slowdown in emerging markets, and
sure,
how are you exposed to that?
Okay. So, yeah, so if we go back, so 35% of our sales globally are in the developing markets, so a fairly big footprint around the world. If you look in terms of our growth expectations for that group, we've grown on average around 10% annually over the last decade. We guided for the next 5 years, we think the range of growth will be between 8 to 12% annually for that group. However, in 2014, we were somewhat more cautious. We came into the year more cautious and indicated we think we'll grow somewhere between 6 and 10% this year in the developing markets. So more cautious than the longer-term trend based on some of the issues that you've raised here, Andrew. If you then look at where our presence is in the emerging markets, roughly half of our presence is made up of our business in China, Brazil, and Korea. And so each of those has got some dynamics going on. We think we'll grow somewhere in the mid to high single digits in China, so somewhat below trend levels. Double-digit growth continues in Brazil, so we feel good about the momentum of the business there. And in Korea, we continue to have a very solid business that continues to grow. Agree with the issues, as you stated, around trends on growth, and we do see somewhat moderated growth for the group, but we continue to, you know, feel good about our performance in those emerging markets. In terms of FX, basically the company has a policy of hedging 50% of our exposures to foreign exchange movements on a rolling basis 1 year forward. And so that gives us some stability and predictability to manage changes in foreign exchange rates. But in particular in the emerging markets, you don't always have the ability to efficiently put on hedges. So the main tools that we use to manage our exposure there, which we've frankly done very well over many years, is a couple things. One is a philosophy of localizing our production and our cost base, which gives us a natural hedge against exchange rate movement. So we've been doing that very actively over many years, and we have a pretty balanced exposure position in the majority of these countries. And then secondly, we also manage our portfolio and have to manage pricing in certain cases to be able to offset the effects of devaluation. And again, we have people with the right kind of experience to be able to do that. So we feel okay about our ability to manage exchange rates. Now, if you look at the guidance we gave for 2014, as we entered the year, we thought we had somewhere between, on a revenue basis, 0 to 1% exposure to FX movements, or 0 to 5 cents a share. If we were to finish this year at the current levels, we think we would be somewhat higher in terms of the impact of foreign exchange on the business, somewhat higher than 5 cents a share, and we think that'll be concentrated in the first half of the year.
And what were the big changes, just, I think you could talk about, but what were the big changes since 98 that you guys hope to implement it? Because I think the example that investors keep bringing up, well, if you look at the 10K in 98, was a huge hit. What is different now versus...
Good question. So the couple of issues are, one is since 98 and in the early 2000 period, the company established this foreign exchange hedging policy, which was not in place at the time in the late 90s. So we put in place this rolling hedge position of 50% of our exposure, which gives us the ability then to have more predictability on the results of the business and gives you a period of time then to adjust your operations to offset exchange rate movements. And then the second thing we've done, as I mentioned, was a very strong push through the last now 15 years to localize the production activities and raw material sourcing around the world to give ourselves a natural hedge, because in the end, that's really the way you have to manage a global and diverse business like ours to shield yourself from these exchange rate movements, which always are occurring one way or another.
One of the themes I think that we have seen in the industrial world, some of the companies that were extremely successful in riding the growth in CapEx in the emerging markets over the past decade, you know, sort of experiencing some issues with growth, you know, at the same time, I think you actually really stood out in terms of your growth. Can you speak about what is different? How is your EM portfolio is positioned in emerging markets to take advantage both of spending on the industrial side as well as the consumer side? And how fungible is this manufacturing footprint?
Yeah, so if you look at the model that 3M has, which we've been operating in emerging markets for now about 70 years, there's a very well-established approach that we take to the markets, which has been very successful across the entire portfolio, which is we'll enter a market in early stage of development with a sales operation, typically an early stage of economic development. We'll sell our products that are applicable to the infrastructure that's built out. So if you think about road signage, you think about cabling and power utility connectors, as the country is building out that base infrastructure, we'll enter with those products and establish our business. As then the economies mature and develop an industrial base and manufacturing, including in some cases electronics, we then build on our business locally, where we'll introduce products and capability to satisfy the requirements of those markets in those areas. And then in the latest stage of development, when countries start valuing things like safety, we'll enter with our safety products that are important in a more regulated environment. And finally, as GDP improves on a per capita basis and you see a modernization in the consumer retail as well as healthcare areas, we'll enter last with our consumer and healthcare businesses, which then we supplement on the existing base of the business we have in that country. So it's a very typical progression for the company that we've used and repeated in now approaching 70 countries around the world. And what you see is at various stages. So if you look in Latin America today, where we've been for the longest, the footprint of our business profile looks very much like the average for the company, because we've built out all of those five segments in places that are not quite as mature on that scale. For example, China today, while we have a significant presence there, we're overweighted still to electronics and industrial businesses, and we're right now very quickly building out the consumer and healthcare businesses, where we're growing between 15 to 20% annually, because they're at a stage of development where that becomes relevant to the consumers, becomes relevant as they start to modernize the services that they offer in that business. in terms of the fungibility of capacity, it's also part of 3M's model. If you look at our return on capital, which has exceeded 20% now for a number of decades, one of the contributors to that very good performance and very effective deployment of capital is the fact that many of our production lines and factories share that equipment across different product sectors. So you might have a single production line where you have products coming off that are being sold into the industrial space, into the consumer space, into a safety market. And as our business shifts, we're able to redeploy that capital very effectively and that capacity into a market that might be increasing for the company. So the company's model works very well. And, you know, as I mentioned, a third of our sales last year from products which were launched in the last 5 years. So we need to have a very well-developed approach to be able to move the use of capacity across different sectors to continue to generate premium returns.
Matt?
Yeah.
Thanks. So two unrelated questions, but just finalizing up on Andrew's questions around FX. You know, Venezuela, you know, is kind of ground to a halt. Included in that 0 to 5 cents of FX hit, is that including just, you know, there's basically zero auto production in Venezuela? Is that incremental to that comments about FX, or is that included? Is question one. I'll do a follow-up.
Sure. So, yeah, so the FX that I referred to would include any FX impacts we see in Venezuela this year. So, and hence part of the reason I mentioned that we're sort of bumping up against the high end of the FX range this year, point one. Point two, as you pointed out, that's right. Right now, there's not a lot of business activity going on, including with our business, because of the uncertainty around the business environment and foreign exchange and the mechanisms being used to operate in the country. And so we are expecting to see weaker operating results because our revenue has declined there, actually starting in Q4, and that continues. And so that we've comprehended in our overall organic growth and the profitability that comes from that.
All right, cool. And then separately, so the framework you guys have given on the long term, margins are roughly flattish in rough terms. There's a little bit of expansion, but they're roughly flattish. And last year, the first three quarters, we saw revenues up, margins down. And then Q4, there was a massive inflection on margins. The margins were very, very strong. Mm-hmm. How should we interpret what we saw in Q4 as we're now looking out? I mean, can you really start to grow margins? Should we be looking for that this year? Or is it more management is going to pull levers up and down to really just target 9 to 11% top line? So when the revenue is really good, you'll spend it on good long-term investment. When revenue is a little light, you're able to pull back? Or is there something structural here where there's better margin opportunity?
Yeah. So if you look at how we plan the business, first of all, what you observe is that in virtually all of the segments that we compete, we tend to have margins which are either at the top of or very, very close to the top of any peer set. So we operate with a model which generates superior returns not only on capital but also operating margins, which is largely driven by this innovation activity we have, which creates value that we can then generate returns on. So in terms of the model, we've had a consistent performance and superior financial returns through time. And as we look at that from a planning perspective, we think the best opportunity to create incremental value for the company will be to continue to look for areas where we can generate those kinds of returns from the business. And so we always encourage our leaders to look at if they have additional opportunities that they can invest in with the leverage we generate from growth, we encourage them to continue to do that. And therefore, as you said, we orient the thinking around, from a planning perspective, to continue to maintain our margins here in the low 20% range overall for the company, and look for how we can reinvest to grow the business more, more strongly. Obviously, you'll see some ups and downs from quarter to quarter based on specific events within a sector. But I think it's fair to say from a planning perspective that we should think about operating at those kinds of levels going forward, including in 2014.
But your guidance is explicitly actually that was for margin expansion in 2014, right?
So we didn't provide a specific guidance that indicated and called out a number on margins. If you look at the sum of the component parts that we provided guidance on, it does imply some modest margin accretion in 2014.
I want to ask you a question. So your background is in automotive, and you know, these companies are known as great manufacturers. As you know, as you came through 3M, and now as you sort of work with Inga, what do you think of the opportunities on the factory floor that you can address at 3M? If are there any obvious things that you can improve?
Yeah. So if you look at the recent history of the company, what we observed is that the company went through a period in the early 2000s where we launched the lean manufacturing principles across the business and actually beyond manufacturing into all parts of the company, which was very effective for the company. And in fact, we saw our operating margins move from the mid-teens into the low 20s during that time, which is where we've been operating now for a number of years, approaching a decade in that kind of a margin zone. As we now look forward to the future, you know, my observation is that the next leg of efficiency and capability for the company is really to take the next step in terms of deployment of lean in all of our factories, because since that time we've built out a manufacturing network that's much broader around the world, and we need to make sure we have the skills and capability in those factories around the world to be able to run them in a very lean fashion. So I think there's opportunity there for us to continue to deploy lean manufacturing principles and become more efficient. And also this deployment that I talked about of this business process standardization as part of the ERP implementation will also be an important lever for us to be able to be more efficient, both in the back office as well as how we manage our supply chains.
And, you know, I think both you and Inga, you sort of mentioned the supply chain opportunity and sourcing opportunity. I think at the Analyst Day, Inga sort of brought that up. Could you just provide us more color, because it seems sort of an emerging theme for the company, and you have not provided any numbers about this opportunity clearly, but just can you speak broadly about the sourcing opportunity, about COGS opportunity, what is there to look at?
Yeah, so if you look at those two areas, so we have a very effective sourcing, global sourcing activity around the world, which has worked very well for the company. What's true is we believe there's more opportunities in that area as we get better visibility on purchases, in particular in some of the indirect purchasing areas and services, which by having an ERP system will give us better visibility and an opportunity to be more effective in our sourcing globally. So kind of the next step in the evolution of our global sourcing effectiveness. And likewise, from a supply chain perspective, we still are a net exporter from the U.S. So even though 65% of our sales are outside the U.S., we have very competitive plant operations in the U.S. That we use to support the network globally. But we've been actively, as I discussed, building out our footprint around the world. And as we do that, we have opportunities in many cases now to localize supply chains and simplify and get closer to our customers, which makes us more effective. And the other element of that is when you localize production in a country, what that enables you to do when you have local manufacturing and local R&D is you have a much closer relationship with your local customers and OEMs there, and you can start to offer them a product portfolio which is more applicable to their local market and tends to be helpful to not only growth but profitability.
But M&A, you know, you sort of brought out, you know, part of the different capital allocation, a more aggressive capital allocation plan. You know, you've sort of indicated that 3M will step up. Can you just sort of give the audience some background as to what came to the evolution? And the second thing, as we think about M&A, how big, you know, because 5 to 10, you sort of said multi-billion dollar deals. Yeah, I guess that's sure. Anything more than two. So
right.
Give us a sense of where we go.
Yeah. So if you look at the company's history and our model, so we're primarily an organic innovation company, and that's the source of competitive advantage for the company. But what we found through time is that inevitably there are opportunities for us to add to our portfolio of either technologies or brands or buying companies that we can then distribute their products through our global distribution network creates value for the company. So we've deployed in excess of $6 billion towards acquisitions over the last 7 years. And what we've indicated is we expect to continue to deploy towards acquisitions $5 to $10 billion through the five-year period through 2017. Through that process, we've learned some things about what worked best for the company in this area. So we tend to do bolt-on acquisitions. We found our experience with acquisitions is when they're somewhat larger, we tend to have a better performance with them. So think about size being somewhere centered around $500 million. Tends to be where we've found we operate quite effectively. And if sometimes that they're very small, we tend not to prioritize them and do as well. So we've been encouraging our businesses to think about transacting at somewhat larger size in that range that I just mentioned. What's also true is I talked about portfolio prioritization, we're much more actively now looking at where we have the most competitive advantage across our portfolio and doing that from at the corporate level. And so as part of that thinking, we've also concluded it's appropriate for us to add a corporate level acquisition funnel to consider opportunities to acquire to make 3M a better company. And inevitably, as we looked at that, we felt the largest transaction we've done in the past was somewhere above $1 billion. And our conclusion was that as we look at the size of the company growing, we look at allocating this amount of capital, there's no reason to restrict ourselves to transactions that would be $1 billion or less. So we talked in December about being open to consider doing transactions that might be multi-billion dollar in size, which could potentially cross over more than one of our sectors, which necessarily you would look at from a need to be involved at a corporate level. So so we've included that in our funnel, and we'll see as to whether any of those transactions take place over this period. But you know, we wanted to communicate that's how we're thinking about it because we don't want to really be surprising people as we move forward.
Can you sort of update us? You know, you put these assets under strategic review. I guess you sold the business to Orvis.
Right.
I think there were some headlines in the press on the electronics side. But can you just update us how much of the review is completed?
Right.
And, you know, is it even possible for 3M to divest the business
mm-hmm.
out of that portfolio, just given how intertwined your technologies are?
Sure. So, yeah, so if you look at the portfolio, we took a step then in late 2012 to classify several of our businesses into a strategic review category, which is basically when you look at the attributes of businesses where we have competitive advantage and are the most successful, there typically are some key attributes that you find of our businesses that drive success. So that would be combining multiple technologies and novel combinations. Typically, businesses that are global in scope are where we derive strong competitive advantage. And businesses that are a sufficient size that we're relevant to our customers so we can have a strategic relationship with our customers. So inevitably, if businesses are missing one or more of those factors or a few others, they tend not to perform as well and don't have as strong a position in the portfolio. So we classified those businesses, which was about $2.5 billion of revenue or 8% of the company's revenue, into this strategic review category. And we've been going through a process with the business leaders to review how we can address those gaps to enable us to fix those businesses to become good performers with the kinds of return characteristics we expect from our portfolio, which sometimes involves combining them with another business to give them a better cost footprint and a more relevant position in the market. At times, we could consider to harvest a business if we find that the that it's not sensible for us to continue to invest in them. And then in some cases, we can see that we would consider to divest of the businesses as there might be a better owner for a particular business. So in terms of the likelihood of divestitures, it's, I would say, more modest in terms of the likelihood because, as you said, our business model is all about leveraging technologies which are a single asset of the company. We, in our factories, as we've already discussed, we tend to have multiple product lines coming out of an individual factory. In distribution around the world, we have single country operations. So to separate a business with those attributes becomes fairly onerous to be able to try to do that. But nonetheless, we think it's appropriate discipline for us to consider that possibility if it's a business that we don't think has a strategic fit in the company. So we continue to view that as a possible outcome.
But what percent of, what is it, $1.8 billion, I think, right? What percent of the review has you physically?
So, yeah, so we had $2.5 billion under review at the end of 2012. We've now completed the review on $1.5 billion out of that $2.5 billion. And we continue to finalize our review on the remaining billion.
Well, in the remaining minutes, can you provide us, you know, it's interesting, what we are hearing is sort of message on the world may be getting better, but sort of a shallow recovery. You know, you're so global, you really are very unique and you're very balanced exposure. You know, what's the snapshot that you can give us of the state of the world in terms of the economy?
So if you look at how the business is performing right now, if I go back to last year, 2013, we were growing at about a 2% rate organically in the first half of 2013, which was very consistent with the growth rate we'd experienced in 2012 and even in 2011. We saw then a step up in that growth rate in the second half of last year, which averaged about 4.5%. So saw a step up occur. The most notable area of improvement in the trends was in our industrial-related businesses around the world. And we think that trend will continue. So the guidance we gave for 2014 was for 3-6% organic growth. So the midpoint at that 4.5% level, so continuing with the trend that we'd experienced in the second half of 13. If you then break that down a little bit, as I mentioned earlier, 6-10% growth in the developing markets on top of 7% growth in 2013 and 2-4% growth in the developed markets in the U.S., Japan, and Western Europe. So we see that, you know, that continues to be our view for the economy. We've been encouraged by improving growth performance in Western Europe, which is about 17% of our revenue, turned positive mid-year last year, and we expect that to grow 0-3% this year. We expect the U.S. to grow in the range of 3 to 6%, which is in line with the company's overall growth for the year. And in Japan, which is an important business, almost 10% of the company's revenue, we expect to grow in the low single digits. So I would say improvement broadly across, in particular, the developed markets from where we've been operating over the prior couple of years.
Weather in the U.S., have you seen it? Or?
Well, we live in Minnesota, so right. I've seen a lot of weather in the U.S. in this first quarter.
Yes, you have seen.
I don't have any view right now that would cause me to conclude that it's going to substantially impact the company's performance.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.